This is Twit.
If you aren't already plum-tuckered out by all of the times you've heard that millions of identities have been leaked out by X organization, then add this to the list and get back to me when you recover. 198 million Americans' personal voter data was found just hanging out, you know, no big deal, on an unsecured Amazon cloud server. And joining us to pick apart the massive leak is Ian Thompson from The Register. How's it going, Ian?
A little too hot, but apart from that, I'm fine.
Oh, no, you don't have any air conditioning in that office, or you do, and it's just not powerful enough.
Yeah, we do have air conditioning, but the very first time we needed it this year, it rolled over on its back and stuck all its legs in the air. So I'm at the moment sweating like a Trump lawyer.
I'm not going to go there. But you said it. Okay, and you know what? Maybe there's some overlap with this story. First, this particular data leak is believed to be the largest leak of U.S. voter data. Again, a phrase I feel like we keep hearing in other terms of different pieces of data that's being leaked out. How was this discovered, and who discovered it?
Okay, this was discovered by a security researcher at UpGuard called Chris Vickery, who's made something of a career out of these sort of things. Earlier this month, he discovered a massive archive of unclassified pictures of the Pentagon had leaked out. And over the last couple of months, he's been doing regular reports on this. Basically, the guy just searches for Amazon S3 instances which haven't been locked down, has a quick look inside and sees what's there. And in this case, he found pretty much every registered voter in the US's name, address, birth date, political preferences, 1.1 terabytes of data. So a massive find, certainly, and he'll be very pleased with that.
If this is okay, so if this is something that this guy just does, just hops around, checks out S3 servers, see what you find, and oh, hey, you know, I found something that's actually really bad, just hanging out on a publicly accessible server. At what point does it become Amazon's response? I mean, obviously, someone. And we'll talk about it here in a second, you know, was irresponsible in putting that there. But I mean, if this keeps happening with data found on Amazon S3 servers, does Amazon have a responsibility, do you think, to make it more secure?
Well, Amazon has two big advantages in this. One, it has very good lawyers, and B, they write very, very good terms and conditions. So Amazon itself isn't really exposed on this. This is purely user error, as it has been in previous cases as well. This is somebody coming up with, oh, we'll stick all this into an S3 bucket and it'll be fine, and then forgetting to lock it down. And someone else just wanders across it. It's like, ooh, that's really interesting. Fine, I'm just going to write a little piece on that and I'll get a bonus from my boss. I mean, he's responsible. Chris is a responsible security researcher. So the chances of this being snaffled by anyone and everyone isn't going to happen, because he will have warned the company beforehand. But it illustrates quite how much really useful data is just being left out wide open on the web. And anyone with, you know, an Amazon account and a little bit of derring do and some time on their hands can actually go out and find it. And just because Chris found it and reported it doesn't mean that other people haven't found it before that, kept quiet and quietly harvested the data.
Right. Hold on to it when the time is right. They've got it. What kind of data exactly is in?
We're talking name, address, birth date. I mean, it's tricky because the actual archive itself was 1.1 terabytes, but it was part of a larger archive, which was 24 terabytes. So we've only got about a 20th of the total archive of stuff that was collected on voters. But we are seeing a large number of names, addresses, and birth dates, as well as certain voter preferences that have been worked out by various political polling groups. And taken together, that could be a really handy little bundle of information if you're looking to socially engineer people and convince them that either you're from the government or from the party, or just convince them to give you money for, you know, because they know so much about you. It's the kind of principles that scammers have been working on for centuries.
So the company was Deep Root Analytics. What were they going to use the data for? Why were they keeping all this data? Was it for advertising or what?
Political campaigning. It appears that none of the data in the archive is older than January of this year. So it appears this data was collated and used in the 2016 elections. So the way this is used is basically it allows parties, in this case a Republican Party, to work out which voters are likely to vote in which way and which voters are slightly iffy or on the fence. And then you can target those on the fence voters. You can make sure that your core supporters are being constantly reminded to go out and vote. and you don't have to waste time with people who obviously aren't going to vote for you. I mean, if you're a Republican electoral strategist and someone lists their, you know, and someone is listed as having an interest in Planned Parenthood or, you know, universal healthcare or something like that, you know, you're probably onto a loser and you don't need to start hitting these people with adverts. But if someone, say, you know, a member of the NRA and a veteran, but also believes in, you know, decent healthcare, they could be identified as a swing voter, and they could be targeted with adverts which would fit in with their particular preferences. So, I mean, it's if you look at the level of detail that political targeters are getting into now, they're really trying to get a picture of every individual, stick it onto a big data server, and then they can go through and maximize their effort where they think they're going to get the most bang for their buck in terms of getting votes for their candidate.
Why do you think security, like best security practices, haven't kept the pace as we've kind of entered this world where big data is so much a part of everything online? You know, the marketers, you know, the sites that we use all the time, they're all harvesting this data. Some of them are very secure about it. Yet then sometimes, like randomly, you just have the server just hanging on to this entire database with potentially very harmful, damaging information about people that they would not want other people to know. And there appears to be, you know, very little kind of consequence that ends up getting paid as a result of that. Why isn't security, why hasn't it kept up with just the power that big data brings with it?
Well, I think the problem is twofold. Firstly, security is traditionally over the last, up until the last 5 years or so, IT security was its own little department that you went to when you were in trouble and who issued memos about what you should do, which were promptly thrown in the circular filing cabinet and forgotten about. So, I mean, that's changed slightly as security has become more and more part of the IT function. But if you're, a political analyst group, then IT security is not going to be particularly high on, you know, you might have a geek in the office who knows about it. But the kind of people who are compiling these databases probably didn't have a security background or security training and just didn't even think. It's kind of like the analogy I use occasionally in print is you always keep a spare roll of toilet paper by the toilet just in case the one you've got runs out, and because you know what happens when you don't. You only make that mistake once, and it's the same with backups, it's the same with security. It's the kind of mistake you only make once, but when you do make it, it's fairly catastrophic. So in this case, I think it was just people collecting and harvesting and working through all this information, and security just wasn't considered to be a factor. They were primarily focused on getting the end result they wanted, and as is so often in this case, made a little bit of a mistake, left one of their buckets front facing with no protection, and anyone could get in there. It is a depressingly common story, and this is going across military, finance houses, programming houses. It happens far more often than it really should.
So, I mean, to Jason's question was, why isn't anyone, I mean, what are the consequences here? Obviously, someone from Deep Root Analytics will probably be fired. But what about Deep Root Analytics itself? Like, should there be a punishment for them?
Well,
I mean, probably people won't.
Legally.
Maybe people won't use them anymore. But yeah, legally?
Yeah. I mean, legally, it's a very tricky area because case law hasn't been fully established on this. Yes, they're going to find it an awful lot harder to get contracts. But if they're very good at their job, it's not going to be that hard to get contracts. Secondly, I think everybody who develops databases like this will get a little plaque to go over the top of their monitor saying, lock the thing down. And there'll be frequent, you know, mental beatings from senior management for people to actually remember this. Basically, this kind of thing is only going to get fixed in sort of leaps and jumps. You know, somebody makes a mistake like this, you can guarantee that every political analyst group has read this story today and is now saying, panicking, going, have we locked all our systems down? So there's another industry sector who has, you know, sort of cleaned up its act a little bit. Give it 6 months, a year, somebody else comes on board who wasn't around for this one, they may do the same thing again. The problem is any computer security expert will tell you that the main problem with security is the layer 8 problem. You've got 7 network stacks and then layer 8 is us. And we are the main problem on this. And until people have a constant thing in the back of their mind, how secure is this? How could somebody get into this? How can I lock this down as much as possible? Then we're going to carry on seeing these sort of things come through. Now, it doesn't appear in this case that the damage was too great because it was locked down fairly quickly and, you know, the material itself was incomplete, but that will change. And until, you know, people actually stop, think about what they're doing from a security aspect and then apply that, then journalists like you and I are going to be talking about these stories for many, many years to come.
Well, is there, I mean, is there some responsibility on their part not to put this kind of information on the cloud at all? I mean, what is that even possible?
Well, technically it is possible, but it's not really workable because it appears that this data was being shared with multiple political action groups around the US and abroad. So short of sending 24 terabytes of information backwards and forwards across the wires, there wasn't that's not really feasible in this kind of situation, particularly if you've got 10 or 12 people working on it. So the easy answer, and the answer that the tech industry has been telling us to do for many years now, is stick it all on the cloud. That way everyone can get into it and no problem sorted. The problem is you've then got to secure that information, and that was clearly not done in this case.
Right. So basically we should, I mean... Time and time again, these stories happen, and at some point, I'm like, when should I stop being surprised that it happened? Because I mean, this is just the world we live in right now, right? Like, I mean, hacking, data leaks. It's so easy for this information to get out, and yet at the same time, we're trusting all of our important information to exist there. So this is just the way it is, right? We should just get used to it.
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, there was. I remember when California first started talking about having breach notification laws so that people would have to be alerted when their information was leaked online in this way. A lot of tech companies supported it, but not for the reason you'd think. Now, initially, a lot of tech firms and a lot of firms in general were dead against this. It's like, you know, this is a private matter. We will deal with it internally and inform our customers privately. But then somebody pointed out, well, hang on. The amount of data leaks that go on a day-to-day basis, you're going to get endless alerts and people will just get used to it. And they'll get used to the idea that, you know, occasionally their data leaks out a little bit. And so a lot of firms actually ended up supporting these disclosure laws because, you know, it's kind of like with Windows Vista. You know, you've got so many security panels clicking up that you just clicked OK and the whole thing became useless. Same sort of thing with data breach notification reports. But yeah, I mean, I honestly don't see, other than companies getting an awful lot smarter, anyway, or getting a severe financial penalty, which is, let's face it, isn't going to happen from Congress, then we're just going to see this coming again and again and again. Now, you might think, as journalists, we should be happy with this because it gives us stories to write about. But I, for one, am heartily sick about writing these sort of stories where one wazzard just left an S3 bucket open and anyone could get it. You know, it's not particularly, you know, technologically advanced. It's not very interesting, but we do have to cover it so that people know they could be at risk.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we keep saying it's so easy, just left this bucket on something. Is it really that easy? I mean, could I go on there? Like, could I be Chris Vickery and just spend some time? Or is it, yeah. I mean, is it harder than we're talking about?
No, I mean, obviously he has his own software which he's developed to do this. But I mean, if you look at this archive, it was very innocuous bucket name. You wouldn't, you know, nothing like super secret electoral data or anything like that. It was just a question of trial and error. So it's like, yeah, bucket, let's see what's here, see if there's a lot of stuff in there. If there's a lot of stuff in there, maybe I'll take a look at it. Takes a look at it, sees bingo, and that's it. That's your headline. You know, I mean, anybody can do this stuff. And I would be amazed if the intelligence agencies didn't have people doing this 24/7. If they don't, they're really missing a trick because there's a host of good information out there. But, you know, I mean, it's really that simple. Just get yourself an account and go for a trawl. And, you know, some of the stuff you can find in there, as Chris has shown again and again and again, there are volumes of unsecured data out there, which pretty much anyone can get their paws on.
Yeah, and in this case, it was responsible disclosure. Let them know ahead of publicizing this so that they were able to kind of, you know, close off that data and everything. But like you said earlier, you still have no idea who, if anyone, had possibly accessed that ahead of time. You just know that it's not accessible now. And gosh,
I mean, we're talking, this has been open for months.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, legitimately anybody could have gone in and got that data and no one would have known that much about it. I should imagine they're examining their server logs very, very carefully now. Just to see in case, you know, if they can identify any IP addresses that have got it. But they're not going to be talking about that too much. So we shall see.
Yeah, absolutely. Ian Thompson from The Register, always love getting you on, man. Thank you so much for coming on tonight. Appreciate it.